Welcome to Cat Crazy. I'm Tracy Hotchner, and I am crazy about cats and the people who care for them. I'm here every week with answers to your questions about living with your kitty. My number is 888-429-5471. I want to thank my sponsors. I've invited these companies to be here because I believe in them and use them myself. I hope you'll show your appreciation for their support by becoming a customer yourself. And Whole Life Pet will send you a free sample box of freeze-dried protein treats for cats and dogs if you send me your mailing address to radiopetlady@gmail.com. You can also send me any questions to radiopetlady@gmail.com. There's a whole week's worth of wonderful live pet shows I co-host on our own Radio Pet Lady Network. Stay tuned for Dr. Donna on The Expert Vet right after this show. Cat Crazy is a production of Eight Paws LLC, which is solely responsible for its content. My number again is 888-429-5471. That's 888-429-5471. I'd love to hear from you. And a slight correction, there'll be no The Expert Vet after the show tonight because we're getting ready for the new show, The Pet Cancer Vet with Dr. Sue Ettinger, which will debut next Monday night right after this show. So from now on, The Expert Vet will be on Wednesdays right after the live dog travel experts. If you're confused, imagine how confused we are. Just go to RadioPetLady.com. Check out the schedule, and you'll probably be clearer about this than I am, as is Leah, one of my wonderful listeners who looks after her granny with Alzheimer's on Monday night, so she can't call in, but her cat, Callie, has brought us together, and she's always noticing little errors on the website, little dates that are wrong, and she said to me, well, I guess you'll be having The Expert Vet on Wednesday night, and she was right, I will. I have a wonderful guest co-host here tonight, someone you've already come to know and love, Dr. Jason, the preventive vet, who is going to be my guest co-host tonight on Cat Crazy. So if you have any questions, medical questions about your kitties or dogs, if there's any dog listeners that want to sneak one in, our number is 888-429-5471. Dr. Jason, the preventive vet, you had a great recent week or two with your cool book. Why don't you brag a little? Little time for bragging.
I love it. How much time do we have? No,
I'd say a couple hours. Good.
Perfect. No, I have. It's been a lot of fun. You know, I came out with my first book. It's the I'm writing a series of pet safety tip books. The series itself is called Start Off on the Right Paw, and the first installment is the dog version, which is 101 essential tips you need to raise a happy, healthy, safe dog. And I just got that back from the printer in early February. And I've been busy promoting that and, you know, getting it into people's hands. And I've recently gotten into a fantastic chain of local supermarkets here out in Portland, Oregon called New Seasons. They're now carrying it. It's now available on Amazon. There's a few local veterinary hospitals out here that are carrying it. I've got a vet hospital out in Minnesota that's carrying it, one down in Salem, Oregon. So it's
that's been going really brilliant. Well. That's a great way to get a book about pets out to pet lovers, is to have the places where people go with their pets be willing to have the book there. That's really terrific.
Yeah, and this is basically designed to take, you know, either to be in addition to or take over for a lot of the puppy packs that, you know, vet hospitals give out or breeders or shelters and rescues. And the cat version will be coming out later this summer.
Well, that's what we're all going to be looking for.
Yeah.
101 tips, safety tips. You just mentioned something to me that I don't know if anyone listening has been aware of this. When I said to you, okay, so what are the some of the things we want to think about preventing at this time of the year? And you said cats falling out of high-rise buildings, out of windows, as people open them up for fresh air? My God, this never occurred to me. Tell us a little about what this danger is all about.
So it happens often enough in both cats and dogs, but more in cats. It's got a name. It's called high-rise syndrome.
Oh, my God.
And it was actually first sort of studied retrospectively in that, you know, vets weren't dropping cats out of windows to studying it. They were looking at records of the animals.
Thank you.
Yeah, just want to clear that up. No animals were harmed in the, well, intentionally.
In the making of this information, right.
So it was at the Animal Medical Center in New York City where I did my internship. They actually did it before I was there in New York. And they noticed it was happening so frequently that a lot of these cats were coming in with kind of a similar constellation of injuries. And then they started kind of looking at, you know, what were the factors that influenced the severity of injuries, whether or not cats survived, hospital stays, things of that nature. And they actually found, interestingly, that cats that fell from between 2 and roughly 7 stories tended to fare worse than the cats that fell from above 7 stories.
So, how odd. What do you make of that?
Well, I think that the prevailing theory, and there's actually a really cool video on nationalgeographic.com that shows cats kind of flipping, but as they kind of reach what would be kind of terminal velocity, cats, their bodies are just so malleable and so flexible that they're able to actually right themselves and land in a more relaxed posture on all fours, as opposed to sort of landing on their back and things of that nature. Now, that's not to say they don't sustain injuries when they fall from above 7 stories. But what's interesting is that they tend to sustain kind of similar injuries. And what most pet owners would imagine probably is that, you know, they break arms and things of that nature.
Yes.
And they do that, but they also, because the force keeps them going, they tend to have fractures of like their jawbone or their hard palate. They tend to get bruising of their heart and their lungs. They can rupture their urinary bladder. So there's all these injuries that happen internally that are less obvious. So sadly, some people actually, you know, their cat falls out the window, they find them, and they assume that there's not a problem because the cat's actually walking. So they figure they didn't break a leg. And then 24, 48 hours later, some of these, like, say, lung bruises or heart bruises or things of that nature really start to manifest themselves, and they have some significant trouble.
So this sounds a little like what happens in car accidents. I was a volunteer EMT for 8 years in East Hampton, New York, where I used to live. And one of the things about car accidents, or MVAs as they're known, motor vehicle accidents in the field, is that the seatbelt in a modern car really, for sure, 100% saves your life. The car looks as if no one could walk away. And almost everybody does fully walk away, even walking, ambulatory. And the car is totaled. I mean, the car is completely unsalvageable. The car takes the brunt of it. But the internal energies that the injuries that people have are not immediately apparent to them. Yeah. And they can die within hours or a day or two if they're not only seen at the emergency room, but properly evaluated. And so some of the really bad situations are when they don't do a CT or an MRI or even an X-ray, and there is all that internal injury. And you can imagine how amazing that a cat survives this. A dog would not survive that fall, correct?
Some do. Some do. I mean, high-rise happens in dogs, but they certainly tend to sustain more injury just because – you know, they're dogs and not cats. We always say cats aren't small dogs. Well, dogs aren't large cats, so they don't have this, some of those same, you know, natural protections. So some dogs do survive, but they also tend to get a lot more fractures of their long bones. And so people, I think, realize those more obviously, and so get them into the vet, whereas cats are kind of, I mean, they're the great sort of, you know, hiders of disease and things
and
anyway.
Pain. Right.
Exactly. So really getting them in, and getting them in, you know, you don't want to necessarily bring them right to your vet if your vet is closing in 5 minutes, you know, or something of that nature. You know, it's great if they can get you in, that's fantastic. But also being aware that even if your vet's not open, getting them to the emergency hospital for that initial evaluation, because like you said, imaging is very important. You know, we can do MRs and CTs in cats and dogs. They're not typically our first line of imaging, but X-rays are standard. Pretty much every vet practice can do that, and certainly every you know, emergency practice can do that. And that can start to show you some bruising, you know, in the lungs. And if there's a problem when they listen to their heart as far as the rhythm, maybe getting an EKG and getting an electrical trace and seeing if there's maybe some indication that you've got some heart bruising. But those things can really start manifesting even 48, 72 hours later.
Now, your specialty before you branched out and created your own new specialty, the preventive vet, was an emergency room doctor. You were that ER doctor, right?
I was. I mean, I never achieved board certification. I was on my way with my residency, but I did a lot of work in the ERs, both out on the East Coast and here in Portland. And, you know, and we see it a lot, and we see the high rise stuff as the weather starts heating up. So it's very common in the sort of, you know, early, you know, in the spring and early summer, especially as people are airing out their apartments and things of that nature, and the weather is warming up. We see it an awful lot. And it's actually, you know, people think high rise. I don't live in a, you know, a skyscraper.
Right.
Safe. I mean, there's a lot of houses that have third story windows and even second story windows. And I've certainly treated cats that have fallen from second story windows that have survived, but have spent, you know, several days in the ICU, you know, on supportive care. Maybe they're needing a, you know, surgery to repair a, you know, a fractured jawbone or something like that.
Fighting for their life, basically.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, this is something really important to realize, that the second or third story window that your cat can fall out of, your dog too, but the cat has that curiosity which can quote unquote kill them. And we also have this deranged idea that because they are so brilliant at jumping down right. from a height, that they can just do it. And that flight pattern that you were talking about of the tumbling in the air is something that they are aerodynamically, genetically wired to do. There's a fancy name for it, but they've actually studied it to study things like, I don't know, rocket ships or something. I mean, there's something about the way that by their nature they can flip. And as you talked about, if there's not enough time to make all the revolutions
right,
and land correctly,
themselves.
Yeah, then they fall on their back and maybe have a head injury yeah. or a back injury. But they have this amazing way of flipping around, and no one would throw the cat out the window to test this,
right.
folks. It's just
right.
something that has been documented one way
because
or another.
Cats throw themselves out the window, sadly.
They do. And it's called high-rise syndrome?
High-rise syndrome. And I've got a blog post about it on my website at thepreventivevet.com. And I've actually embedded that great YouTube video from National Geographic in the post. So you can actually see this cat. And this cat, they did sort of, you know, hold up, you know, not all that far. And the cat, you know, jumped or whatever, and you see it writing itself, and it's really cool because it's in slow motion.
I'm going to be going to that thepreventivevet.com, and you go to Dr. Jason's blog, and high-rise syndrome. This is very cool in a kind of disturbing way, but I mean, we're all pretty ignorant. We just don't think, well, you know, everyone knows that toddlers will fall out of windows, second story, ninth story. They're curious. They don't have fear of that height or any sense of that impending danger, and neither does a cat or a dog.
And
so just they can look down from a great height, but they don't think, uh-oh, better go back inside and take this elevator. They don't think that, right?
Exactly. Well, and that's really the whole reason why I started the Preventive Vet, is that there's so much stuff, you know, high-rise amongst, you know, the conditions. There's so much stuff that pet owners just really rightly don't think about. Nobody, you know, people don't tend to think about the worst case scenario, you know, when they get their first puppy or their kitten or whatnot. But these are all things that I and my colleagues, you know, are seeing on a regular basis. And it's the type of thing where the more awareness there is out there, the better off, you know, pets and their people are going to be.
Yeah, it's a pretty devastating situation, one in which pet insurance would be a lifesaver in terms of a bill, because if they say to you in the emergency place, well, you're going to have to sign here, and we're going to estimate that the cost of just the diagnostics between the x-ray, the ultrasound, the whatever we have to hook up, we're looking at $2,500 before we do anything, before we find out if we need to do surgery or overnight stays in emergency. You really need pet insurance, because these are the sort of accidents. It's why they call them accidents, as they say on the ambulance. It's why they call it an accident. We need to take a quick break. When we come back, we have a wonderful special friend of Cat Crazy, Robin from Covered in Cat Hair, whose foster kitty, Freddie, has been diagnosed with FIP and was doing really badly last week. So I'm dying to know how things are going with him. I'm hoping maybe you can give her some feedback on whatever she has to tell us. But let's go for a quick break. When we come back, please join us and Robin from Covered in Cat Hair. Our number is 888-429-5471. We'll be right back. Waruva is a privately owned company that makes pet food in a human food facility. So it's good enough for you to eat. All the flavors of Waruva, Cats in the Kitchen, and their more economical BFF, Best Feline Friend brands are great for finicky little dogs and choosy cats, especially those you're trying to transition away from dry foods, which Waruva chooses not to make because carbohydrates are inappropriate for an obligate carnivore, and they believe your pussycat deserves to eat as well as you do. This show is also supported by the pheromone products Feel Away for cats and Adaptil for dogs. Pheromones are chemical communicators that are a natural signal of comfort in your pet's brain. Adaptil can help with problems like separation anxiety in dogs, and Feel Away diffusers can reduce problems in a multi-cat household. Veterinary behaviorists often recommend Feel Away and Adaptil as stress relievers to solve behavior problems. Pheromones can help adopted cats and dogs make the adjustment to their new home and comfort young puppies and kittens who have just left their litters. Look for Feel Away and Adaptil at RadioPetLady.com, where you can buy them from Dr. Sean's online store, PetCareNaturally.com. This show is also brought to you by Nordic Naturals for people and their pets. Research shows that even the best diets are deficient in the essential fatty acids found in their omega-3 oils. Nordic Naturals uses sustainably sourced wild fish from healthy stocks with third-party testing to guarantee purity and freshness. Nordic Naturals Omega Pet products bring the same health benefits to the cats and dogs in your family when you add Nordic Naturals Omega-3 fish oil to their bowls every day. I am back. You're listening to Cat Crazy. I'm Tracy Hodgson with my wonderful guest co-host, veterinary specialist Dr. Jason, the preventive vet. And we have Robin calling from Covered in Cat Hair. Robin, welcome back to the show. How's Mr. Freddie doing?
Thanks for having me, Tracy. I'm very reluctant to talk about Fred because he actually passed away.
Oh, come on, Robin, after all that, sweetheart. Oh, man, this is the saddest situation, Jason. Robin, her whole life is dedicated to fostering and rescuing cats. She has just a wonderful homemade facility. She has a kitty cam in one of her bathrooms, and this little cat, Freddie, just grabbed her heart, huh, Robin? Yeah. And she has gone the distance with him, and even last week when she called in, I said, is it really worth what you're going through? She took him to Jerry Post at the Veterinary Cancer Center thinking maybe he had cancer, but no, it was FIP. She was going to try a really innovative new, I can't call it a cure, but some kind of a treatment that was going to extend his life. And she said, you know, he just really deserves that someone give him every chance in the world. And Dr. Elizabeth Hodgkins was on, and she was so touched too. And you know, Robin, I know it's really hard to talk about, but you made the call. So if you can't talk because you're just choked up, I just need to say everyone listening really loves you for what you've done. And nobody else would have put themselves out like that for Freddie. You know, Jason, people find a stray and it's super sick or it gets super sick right away. You know, honestly, they put them down mercifully and kindly. But Robin just... she just did everything she could, thinking, you know, you never know, because there is always that one time, right? When someone goes the extra distance and you just get bloody lucky. An immune system just kicks in, or I'm sure you saw FIP kitties in your work, right?
Yeah, I mean, an FIP is definitely, and we did chat last time I was on about Mr. Freddie, and I'm very sorry to hear that news, Robin. If you're part of my friendship, I can say this on internet radio, it's an absolutely crap disease.
Oh, you can say that. Even say it's shitty. I think you're allowed to say
there
shitty.
You go. It really is. It's just one of those absolutely devastating conditions that we, you know, at this point, we just don't know enough about. We just don't, you know, we're behind the eight ball on it. It's certainly not from a lack of trying. I mean, Wynn Feline Foundation's been funding a lot of research, and there's a lot of great minds out there trying to figure it out. And it's just one of these that's just, it's beating us at this point. And I know it's devastating for pet owners, because you just look and you're thinking, you know, there's a lot of great minds. There's some pretty intelligent people out there. We've got some dedicated owners like Robin, and we can't break through on it.
The problem that we had was we just spent 2 months doing tests because nobody wanted to say FIP, and you can't test for it. So we spent $7,000 doing tests and treatments, and hoping that we could find something other than FIP.
Right.
I mean, we were even hoping that he had lymphoma, because at least lymphoma we can treat and could extend his life and give him some quality. But after I spoke to you guys, that next day he just really had nothing left. He had the dry form, so it affected his neurology, and he couldn't even lift his head anymore. So we had to make the tough decision to let him go on Thursday. But I will tell you that he had the most peaceful and loving passing that we could give him.
Yeah. And you know, he really deserved that, Robin, and it's really hard to give it when your heart is so involved and your hopes are so high, and you see the little guy not even be able to move, and you realize that everything you've done just didn't make a difference. But you know what? I think it did, because he had a couple of months of really loving care. And even if it meant a lot of vet visits, he was there with the human who was, you know, out there fighting for him. And animals know that.
Well,
for all I
yeah.
know, he wouldn't have had the 2 months if it weren't for you. We would have given up earlier. We don't know.
Well, he wouldn't have had even this long of a life if it hadn't been for us, because
That's
he
right.
came out of a horrific situation. So he would have died outdoors in the elements, or he would have been yeah. in a shelter and they would have put him down. And I know that we did a lot for him, but the beautiful thing is, because he was the mascot for our Kitties for Kids program, he was the best of the year. The Connecticut Veterinary Medical Association gave him that award.
Oh, and nice.
When I announced had passed away, we literally got thousands of people commenting, sending us emails, telling us how much Fred meant to them. So he did not
really
live anything to that.
Yeah. Juan, I think that's
this guy got all kinds of recognition.
Yeah, and I think that's really, you know, that's a really, it's really, you know, if nothing else, of course, you know, he wasn't able to, you know, achieve a cure, and I know you guys went through a ton, but think about all those people that are now aware of him and
That's
his
right.
plight and FIP.
That's right.
And the need to really try and advance what we can do so that other cats and other people don't suffer through this same thing. And the fact that you were able to, in the end, not just to, you know, go all out and really try and do everything that you, you know, humanly could and almost superhumanly could to extend his life, but also the quality of life, is to be able to give him that peaceful passing at the end and
yes.
recognize, you know, that because that really, I mean, I lost my own cat last summer to lymphoma, and he was with me for a long time. I absolutely loved and adored him. But it's amazing when you sort of make that connection where, okay, you know, everything's been done, and now it's time to, you know, the last selfless act that you
yes.
can do is to give them that, yeah. that peace
yeah.
when it happens. And so to hear you say that he had this, you know, beautiful, peaceful passing, it just brought back memories of my own cat's passing. And I commend you for not just doing what you could to really improve his quality of life and extend it, but also to really just give him that at the end and appreciate that for what it was. And also everything that your you know, trials and tribulations did to raise awareness for FIP, I think is huge.
I agree. And also, and the courage to keep on trying to look for treatments when, in a way, that can be harder on the human than on the cat, you know, you always put him first. You said, you know, he just deserves every single chance in the world. This dopey little cat that just, you know, grabbed your heart. And we've all had those animals in our life.
We gave him one gift before he passed, which was, you know, he was a foster cat. So Sam and I adopted him.
You Aww. Did. So he knew he had real parents.
We filled out the contract. We made it formal, and we signed it and everything.
Aww.
Because he was our cat.
That's so really nice. Cool. That's really cool, Robin. So, you know, wherever all this energy goes, it doesn't just stop. You know, that energy and that
yeah.
love, it doesn't just stop cold with the moment that he crosses that rainbow bridge. It's still there. And you're touching us
yeah.
and you're touching the people listening and you're touching all those people in Connecticut and the school kids. Everybody feels it. So, you know, it keeps on being in the universe. And it's great that Wynn is studying it. I don't know if Morris Animal Foundation is studying it. But after you get the donations to offset these costs, that might be,
yeah.
you know, a Freddie fund. It might be certainly something I'd love to explore with you, to have a Freddie fund in his honor. To
We already started it.
Nice.
Terrific.
Well, I think also getting all those school kids up in yeah. Connecticut involved with that and kind of keeping them engaged. I mean,
yeah,
that's right.
You could pretty much guarantee you're going to get some future vets and researchers and really, you know, great feline activists out of that, because
you're right,
you know,
Jason,
that's why pets are so beautiful. One of the reasons is that they just, you know, they get under our skin, and especially with kids, you know.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. So Robin, if somebody wants to be involved in whatever way, they go to Covered in Cat Hair and they'll find the Freddie Fund and all the stuff you've written about and right on Covered in Cat Hair, right?
They will. They can go to our website, Kid and Associates, and there's a badge on it on my Covered in Cat Hair website. And we're going to be posting information about the Fred Fund shortly. It won't be, you know, right away, but we're going to be setting that up very soon.
That'll be great. When you've got it all the way up, you should probably come on my NPR show, Dog Talk and Kitties Too, because people there should learn about this. You know, people that aren't savvy yet. The internet's where all the info really is. They're actually still listening on ground radio, and I'm sure they'd love to know about it. All those wealthy people, all the wealthy people in the Hamptons, I'm sure that the Freddie story would touch them, and they'll send a few shekels your way and wipe out those vet bills and start to build up some money that can really help, as Dr. Jason said, to add more fuel to the great minds already trying to figure out this baffling disease that, as I understood it from the many times you've called and the various vets who've helped, all these cats have it sort of dormant in their system. Is that right, Jason? And there's a moment where their immune system dips, whether it's stress or change or something, yeah. And the FIP grabs hold.
Yeah, I mean, it's basically a mutation in a virus that's just so prevalent in the environment, you know, that pretty much all cats have the coronavirus, you know, we're exposed to it, and it's just whether or not it mutates in them. And, you know, beyond that, we don't know which cats are going to get it. We don't know all the epidemiology of it. We don't know, you know, obviously at this point how we're going to cure it or get it into remission or, you know, but, so it really just all focuses on quality of life for the cats that are unfortunate enough to come down with it and the quality of life for the people who are caring for them. And then, you know, making that difficult decision when it happens. But I think, you know, I mean, again, Robin, the fact that you all went through all that, because really, as we had mentioned last time, FIP is a diagnosis of exclusion. So you do all those tests to rule out everything else, you know, and there probably aren't many, you know, conditions where you sit there and you hope that it's cancer, but
yes.
FIP is one of them. And, yeah. You know, I think that's a testament to how great, you know, or how far the oncology community with pets has come, because we can, you know, we're saying, please give the cat something that used to be fatal, because now we can at least hope to improve things,
yeah.
Because really FIP, we can't.
And someday FIP will fall in that category, we hope, where it'll be treatable.
We hope so.
Well, I just saw something in the news the other day that said that they've got cases of people getting a mutated coronavirus in France, and it's killing them.
Yeah.
Oh,
so I
God.
Hope, in a way, that because people are starting to get it,
right.
If they're going to start ramping up some research for it.
Well, and this is virology, you know, like bacteria, we've got pretty good tools against bacteria, although, you know, we're getting some antibiotic resistance and whatnot, but viruses just mutate so quickly and change. I mean, that's the whole, you know, swine flu and
yes.
SARS and all that stuff. And it's really, I mean, the virologists really have their work cut out for them. But again, just some absolutely brilliant minds. And I think it's a matter of funding. You know, of course, a lot of the funding goes towards the human side, you know, but a lot of that then trickles down. A lot of what we learn in human virology then trickles down to animals. And a lot of, you know, the animal models then translate back to people. So it's this whole reciprocal thing. And I do hope that in time we're going to make some really good headway, you know, on coronavirus. It's just sadly not here yet.
And I think that was Robin's point, which is a good one. And the fact that it's happening in France, it's a country with extremely evolved cancer research in particular, just generally good research, but cancer research in particular. So they have great systems and their government pays for a lot of it, unlike here where it's all, you know, like capitalism and sort of financial reward-based.
Yeah.
In France, being socialized medicine and just a different kind of a viewpoint, the government pays for a lot of their research and development. So let's hope that not too many more French people die, that maybe something we can learn from curing them will help the future Freds. Robin, thanks for your courage in calling. Thanks for your courage that you went through with him. And I'll definitely I'll definitely make sure that Paris at Cat Tipper does some tweets about this tomorrow to send more people to read about him. Because as Dr. Jason said, part of it is the effort you make to educate and inspire other people.
Yeah.
So have a good night, sweetie. Well, we look for. Sorry, go ahead.
Thank you. No, I was just going to say we got to kick this FIP in the butt. That's all.
Okay,
yes.
We're working on it. You've inspired
yes.
everybody.
All right.
Have a good night.
Thank
Sleep
you.
Tight.
Thank you, Robin.
Take
good
care.
Night.
We're going to go to a break. When we get back, Dr. Jason, the preventive vet, and I are here to answer your questions. We are going to be talking about cats and vomiting when we come back. I realize, Dr. Jason, I have a couple of very similar emails, and cats and puking seems to come up a lot. So if you have a puking cat, join us, 888-429-5471. We'll be right back after this break. VaxaCheck wants to know, are you worried about the harmful side effects of over-vaccinating your dog, but is your vet worried whether your dog still has protection from previous vaccinations? VaxaCheck is a new blood titer test done right in your vet's office that shows whether your dog has immunity to the deadly core diseases and needs revaccination or not. VaxaCheck should be used on puppies to confirm whether their puppy shots really worked. Shelters should use VaxaCheck on new arrivals to separate healthy dogs from unprotected ones. VaxaCheck, for your dog's safety and your peace of mind. And VaxaCheck for cats is coming soon. This show is brought to you by Halo Holistic Natural Dog and Cat Foods, which are made from real ingredients you can recognize. Read the ingredients on the label of your own dry dog food. Can you identify what's in there? Halo uses real meat in their kibble, no rendered byproducts, chicken meal, or chemicals. The company emphasizes giving back by making donations to shelters through freekibble.com because Halo believes less fortunate felines and canines deserve great nutrition, too. Halo is a private company partly owned by Ellen DeGeneres, where they are genuinely dedicated to keeping your pet happy and healthy inside and out. Precious Cat Litter is privately owned by Dr. Elsie, a feline-only veterinarian whose litters are designed to appeal to kitties and protect their health. His renowned Catatrack litter has a blend of herbs which entice cats into the litter box. Respiratory Relief litter is low dust for pussycats with asthma, which makes it healthy for people and other pets in the family too. And there are special litters for long-haired and senior cats as well. Precious Cat donates litter to shelters and rescues across the country. We are back. This is Cat Crazy. I'm here with my wonderful guest co-host, Dr. Jason, the preventive vet. So throwing up, Jason, I'm sure that many people would like to know, how do you prevent a cat from throwing up? Now, Dr. Elizabeth, who is the official vet of the show, has often said in the past, cats just throw up on a dime. Throwing up for them is just second nature. Throwing up is like A-OK by them. It's just what they do. So people panic about their cat throwing up. But there are things, of course, that you want to be looking out for about vomiting, like how often and whether they keep on retching and what seems to be the trigger. So I have one from an email from some time ago by Gianna or Gina. I'm not sure how she pronounces her name. She says, my name is Gina, and I have two beautiful, talkative Cornish Rex kitties. They are my inspiration, and I love, love, love them an awful lot. For years now, they often vomit right after eating, and if not, they will do it hours after. What can I do? They have seen many vets for this. So, of course, my first question is, what are you feeding, Gina? You feeding dry food? Because any cat who throws up dry food gets a high five from me. But let's say she's not. I mean, dry food, at some point, I'm sure you have discovered this too. At some point, some cats, their body actually rebels against this inappropriate substance, which is all these highly processed carbohydrates. What's digestible for a cat is pure protein, maximum 10% carbohydrates, the equivalent of a mouse or a bird. That's why we say on this show, kitty crack is all dry food. Any wet food is better than any dry food because it's more appropriate for the obligate carnivore. I'm going to guess that she's feeding dry food. And she loves them to pieces and doesn't know that she's not giving them the food that the obligate carnivore should have. But they either vomit right after eating or several hours after. So what do you say to people with kitties like that?
Well, the surefire way to get a cat to not vomit, just as a little aside, is to actually want them to vomit. Because in the emergency room, when you get a cat in that's eaten something that it shouldn't have, like a lily petal or a medication.
Right.
You ask any emergency room veterinarian, getting a cat to vomit can be the most difficult thing in the world when you want them to.
How do you get a dog to vomit, just out of curiosity? Stick your finger down their throat like humans?
Only if you don't like your finger. Apomorphine is the best thing to get a dog to vomit, although hydrogen peroxide at home can work. But with cats, they don't respond to hydrogen peroxide, and they'll probably bite your face off before you have the opportunity to give it to them. And apomorphine doesn't work particularly well for cats in the ER. So there's really only xylazine, which works maybe 50% of the time, and then it also makes them really
poor. Is that given orally?
No, that's an injection.
That's an injectable. Okay.
So getting a cat to vomit when you really need them to can be one of the most difficult tasks in any ER vet's shift.
Wow.
That said, the surest way to get a cat to vomit is to put him on white carpet. And you're pretty much assured of getting him to do it. Although it sounds like Gina is not having trouble with that part. Really, I think anytime you're dealing with a cat vomiting, you know, sadly, a lot of people think as cats get older, I've had numerous clients say, well, he just vomits, you know, occasionally, that's pretty normal, you know, and when you ask them how, regularly, they say, you know, a couple few times a week. There aren't many animals that vomiting a couple few times a week is normal. You know, that's you wouldn't right. assume it was normal that's if your kid right. was vomiting a couple few
that's
times
right.
a week.
That's right.
So there really isn't like normal cat vomiting. Now, when they say normal, oftentimes it means that the cat's walking around the house, you know, eating the plants, and whether they're toxic or not, even just, you know, a non-toxic plant in enough, you know, quantity can cause irritation of the stomach and cause vomiting. And really, at the end of the day, vomiting is a protective reflex, right? Something gets in your stomach that shouldn't be there, either it's irritating or it's toxic or what have you. Your body knows to try and get rid of it. It mm-hmm. decontaminates itself.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Vomiting on a regular basis in cats, you know, you really start to worry about things like inflammatory bowel disease, which can be related yes. to the diet. You know, you start to worry about things like, you know, gastrointestinal lymphoma. But then there's also problems that aren't necessarily primarily related to the digestive tract. We'll get vomiting in cats that have kidney disease. So cats whose kidneys aren't functioning well, and that's something that happens very regularly as cats age. But cats that have kidney disease, their kidneys are not as efficient at clearing out some of these kind of what we would call metabolic toxins
yep.
from their system. And as a result, these toxins then build up and they act at a center within the brain that causes the cat to vomit. So we can see it with kidney disease. Similarly, we can see it with liver disease. You know, there's any number of things, you know, like hyperthyroidism, again, very common in
right.
older cats. Hyperthyroidism causes, you know, can lead to vomiting. So really, you do, you know, you're right. You do want to look at the diet. You know, you want to look at what they're feeding, how much they're getting, if they're fast eaters. You know, even if she's feeding kitty crack and she's, you know, not willing to change her evil ways of doing that, if you will, putting it in something that will slow down her cat's eating. So, you know, because a lot of people will just put out a bowl of food and they'll either leave it out throughout the day or they'll put out a small amount and the cat will, you know, engorge themselves on
yes.
it because it is, you know, it is crack. It's, you know, high in carbohydrates, and that's tempting to a lot of them. But even if you just put that in like a little interactive feeder or, you know, a cat toy, and there's lots of companies that make some good sturdy ones, and you make them sort of push it around the floor and get out a kibble or two at a time here and there. If you slow them down, you might decrease the frequency of the vomiting.
But I would have to say that those toys on this show and in my universe are only okay to put a nice freeze-dried protein treat in, like Whole Life Pet or Halos. That if you want to use those, that's more interactive for brain challenge, not as a way to slow down the eating, although I know there are a number of dog products that are sold for that reason, so that dogs don't eat too quickly and don't get bloat or don't get as fat. But I think that when she says they're my inspiration and I love, love, love them an awful lot, she simply has never gotten in touch with me before, so she doesn't know the kitty crack story. So I'm hoping that Gina's listening or listens to the podcast later. I'll send her an email and tell her to do that. I'd hope she might call in tonight. I'm going to remind her of the number again just in case she wants to. 888-429-5471. If you're out there, tell us about your beautiful talkative Cornish Rex. I'm going to guess, all right, let's say she's not feeding kitty crack. Let's
right.
say she's feeding wet food. If they are throwing up soon after or several hours later, they need very serious medical workups. She says she's seen many vets for this. Now, she doesn't say what the vets did diagnostically. Any vet who would say, well, they seem fine to me, so I guess they're all right, is like those people who see lumps on dogs and go, they're just fatty tumors, don't worry, without doing a needle biopsy.
Right.
So let's just go right down the list. Blood work immediately. Absolutely.
Yeah, I think, you know, the nice thing about blood work is, and I think a lot of people are, you know, they're upset maybe because you don't come to a diagnosis on blood work. Blood work also is really important in ruling out things.
Yes.
So things like diabetes, kidney disease, especially if you're, you know, combining it with the urine testing, which you always should,
yep.
in my opinion, you know, you can rule out an awful lot. So yes, I think blood work, but then also x-rays and, you know, x-rays of the abdomen. So x-rays of the stomach and the digestive tract and two views, very important, potentially three views. You know, and what you're looking for there is there a mass? Now, I believe she said she has two cats and they're both doing it. So the likelihood of them both having a mass in their stomach, probably
pretty
less likely, but possible, right? Or like a foreign body, like a chronic foreign body. But then also very importantly, getting x-rays of the chest and doing a really good examination and evaluation of the back of the mouth, and most likely would have to be done under, you know, sedation anesthesia. And it's also very important to find out, is this truly vomiting or is this regurgitation? Because
explain the difference.
So vomiting is vomiting is an active abdominal stomach reflex.
Okay.
If your cat or your dog, and it applies to dogs as well, your cat or your dog, you know, if you see that they are kind of preparing for the vomit and there's this, you know, retching and contraction of their stomach, you know, of their abdomen, that's vomiting. If they just kind of, you know, if they eat and then they put their head down and there's really nothing that happens before the vomiting, and then all of a sudden there's just a pile of food, that's more likely regurgitation, which is more esophageal in nature. So now we're dealing with the tube that gets the food from the mouth to the stomach, and we're not likely dealing with something within the stomach or the intestines. And so making that determination first, and a lot of that is, you know, from a history standpoint, and also very importantly, if Gina does call in, or, you know, listens at any point, getting video of your dog or your cat doing their vomiting. I mean, everyone's got a video on their iPhone or their smartphone or whatever, or their Flip. Getting a video of your dog doing vomiting, quote unquote vomiting, that'll help the vet determine whether or not it's vomiting or regurgitation. Same works if they're coughing, if they're having seizures, anything of that nature, because most people aren't too excited about coming into their vet and demonstrating what their cat or dog is doing at home. So bring them a video or email them a video.
That's a cool idea.
It can really help with the workup.
That's a great idea. And then you can eliminate if it's the upper part of the digestive system or the lower part, so to speak, like right in the throat area or after it's already gone down the hatch.
And that's going to really help to focus you on where you're going. But regardless, it's very important. You know, especially if it sounds like it's a regurgitation, it's very important to get x-rays of the chest. And again, two views, because there you can also have masses, you can have heart enlargement, you know, and then you can get into things like, you know, you can do CT scans, you can do endoscopy, you can actually look down the esophagus and look for strictures or, you know, polyps or whatever it might be. But really the jumping off point is defining whether it's regurgitation or vomiting. Very important. Doing a, you know, a really thorough evaluation of the back of the mouth, looking for like a chronic linear foreign body or something like that, getting some x-rays, doing the blood and the urine testing, and then really starting to kind of, you know, figure out where you go. But there's a lot of modalities that can help. And one of the advantages of, say, something like, you know, endoscopy would be you could get biopsies, you know, during endoscopy. So if you're looking at things like inflammatory, you know, bowel disease or stomach inflammation, gastritis. Cats can have chronic pancreatitis that can cause it as well. So
really?
So there's a lot of things that can
And that would show up in blood work, would it? Would you get not necessarily?
Not blood work necessarily, but if you're starting to rule out other things or your suspicion is high enough, there are tests for slightly more specific and sensitive feline pancreatitis conditions that can help. Ultrasound can help quite a bit. But what I really would want to impress upon people is that vomiting in cats is not normal. Like there's no normal.
Definitely. All right. We're going to go off for a break. And when we get back, we're going to finish up on Cat Crazy. We'll be right back. This show is brought to you by Vectra 3D for Dogs, a safe and effective topical anti-tick and flea treatment that you put on your dog's skin once a month to repel parasites with the newest technology. Vectra 3D creates a shield on your dog's skin that repels ticks and kills them fast and reliably for the entire month while being safe for the people in your family. Older products do not last the full 30 days and only kill ticks that bite your dog, which can actually transmit the many tick-borne diseases. Vectra for cats and dogs who live where there are no ticks is the anti-flea topical treatment that kills all three life cycles of the flea. Vectra is only available from practicing veterinarians.
Yep,
to learn more and find out how your own vet can get the Vectra products, go to RadioPetLady.com. Support for this show comes from The Honest Kitchen, a family-owned company that makes dehydrated pet foods from 100% human-grade ingredients. Lucy at The Honest Kitchen knows that the least processed foods are the most nutritious and developed her unique foods based on this principle. The Honest Kitchen's all-natural, clean, safe products can assist dogs and cats with chronic health issues like itchy skin, ear infections, and digestive problems, which are often linked to a diet of poor quality or highly processed ingredients. Just add water to the dry mix to create a fresh, warm, healthy meal for your cat or dog. Go to RadioPetLady.com to call The Honest Kitchen for a free consultation about which recipe is right for your pet and to get free samples. We don't want to overwhelm you with vomiting, but I do think that this is a really important, really important. If you want to talk about prevention, you already have a symptom that if it were in any other animal, you would, or human, you would be going to the doctor. You might even go to the gastrointestinal specialist. Oh, my God. Myself, my grandma, my child, my dog is throwing up frequently, many times a week, and even every time after they eat at some point. You would think this was a huge warning signal, and you could prevent the progression of a disease, many of which Dr. Jason just explained. So it's a lucky early warning system. Might even be not early, but medium. Right. I mean, there could already be a disease process underway. The fact that they've seen many vets for this and never been given a diagnosis, you know, it's not enough information. The other thing I'd say when you talk about liver disease, fatty liver disease or pancreatitis, are these cats overweight? If they're feeding kitty crack and whatever age they are, they could easily be getting heavy from all those carbohydrates and just carrying the extra weight. Obesity in a cat can mess up a lot of those organs. So, Gina, we want you to be listening, and maybe you aren't ready to call in, but we want you to go to a good doctor who's going to do all these tests. If you already had the test, something's fishy because they should have found something. Carol had a throwing up question as well. So, Carol, you said, my cat's been throwing up lately, and I've taken him to the vet. Well, you know, you guys, if you're going to take him to the vet and you're not going to call us and only email, what did the vet say? What did the vet do? We need more information so we can straighten things out. Then she wanted to know, and my cat just started reflexing. Maybe she means flexing his upper lip quickly, only one side at a time. What does that mean? I don't know. Is he like Groucho Marx with a cigar? I mean, I don't know. That doesn't mean anything, right? I mean, the cat's just twitching his mouth.
It certainly can. I mean, because cats can also vomit for neurologic reasons. So problems with the nervous system with their brain. And so, you know, we've got some nerves that innervate the side, you know, the side of the face. So if there's a twitch there, that can certainly be it. They can actually, you know, seizures can manifest as anything, you know. We'll see, especially in dogs, we'll see what we call sort of fly biting seizures, where it's just literally that sort of, you know, chomping at the, you know, the front teeth. So potentially that seizure activity, maybe that points us a little bit more towards the neurologic system, potentially even as a cause of the vomiting.
So it's smart of her to notice that. That may be related.
It can be. Or it could be a total red herring, but it may be related. You know.
So and again, the good vet, that would be a really good reason to use your little video flip.
Yeah. I mean, it may be difficult depending on the coat color of the cat and the lighting, you know, to demonstrate. Right. But it would be a really good way because – oftentimes, you know, pets don't typically do what they're being brought into the vet for when they're
never, never. Know? They're adrenaline. All, even if they're lame, they come in just perfect.
Yeah. Yeah.
The adrenaline covers everything up, right?
Yeah. Yeah. And especially with cats. So, you know, it's possible if the cat can control that, but of course, if it's neurologic in origin, the cat's not going to have, you know, the ability to control it, but it would definitely be a use for the video if, you know, the lighting and the coat color and everything is conducive to it.
Okay, so there's your answer to that, Carol, is vomiting means something, definitely. Anyone whose cat is vomiting, and I don't just mean only, and if it's only once a week, there's no reason. Do you throw up every week? If you throw up every week, I mean, and you're not anorexic, then, or bulimic, you know, that's definitely, you'd be going to the doctor. Can you imagine throwing up every week? That would be like so gross, not to mention after every meal at some point.
Yeah.
All right, so here's a preventive, an interesting preventive vet kind of question. It's from Leah about her friend Victoria's cat, Sally. We already have the issue with Sally that she insists on feeding kitten chow. Meanwhile, the cat's fully grown and she's still feeding kitten chow. And she doesn't. And she claims that the cat after 7 years is doing just great on kitty crack. So she's not coming off of it. Okay. I don't want Leah to get high blood pressure because she's found the light. But we can't always get our friends and loved ones to get the light. But Sally the cat likes to chew up cords and wires. Oh. She's done it on and off for the last 7 years. Now, the preventive vet would go, oh, my God, yeah. Cover up the wires. So, you know, the Cat Bible explains this. I am certain that Dr. Jason's book, The 101 Ways to Keep Your Cat Safe, will have it. If you have a wire-curious cat, you just use that light kind of PVC tubing sold at Staples or any office supply place. The stuff that's supposed to make all your wires look tidy also protects them from a cat or a puppy, even, interesting, teeth. So they can all be covered safely, cheaply, easily. It's a kind of like flexible, slinky tubing, right, Jason?
Yeah. And you can actually get, there's stuff out there called, I think it's a critter cord.
Interesting.
And those are actually like impregnated with, like, I think it's a citrus scent.
Oh, how
fascinating. So they're also designed to really discourage, you know, pets from coming at it. But also, I mean, for some cats, if they're really persistent, and certainly for some dogs, you know, getting even like the really rigid PVC tubing, you know, and putting that around all your cords, because really electric cord shock is not uncommon, especially in puppies and kittens, but then also in some older cats and dogs. And it can cause some really significant effects aside from just the burns in their mouth. You'll actually get pets will actually get what's called non-cardiogenic pulmonary edema, which is basically just a fancy way for saying that they get fluid in their lungs that's not because of heart failure.
Wow.
And that can cause some very significant problems, including death. So
I know the work you're doing is great, but you must have been like the coolest emergency room doc. It's like you can see, you have like X-ray vision, and you can think of all the things that could happen from this stuff. And
I was definitely the slowest because I wanted to just educate everybody. You know,
I love it. It's terrific. So, well, only have a couple of minutes left, but here's what this vet told her. The vet said it could be a behavior problem. Hey, guys, how about just prevent it by not allowing it to happen? He mentioned something called pica. This isn't pica. Pica is eating and ingesting and swallowing weird substances. He said it's very rare in cats, like not at all, my friends. Really? Come on. But Sally might have the disorder. Oh, baloney. Just cover up the cords. He stated he can get her on Prozac. So Leah wants to know, could we ask our experts for a second opinion as whether this is pica? No. Or just some normal obsessive. It's not obsessive. The cat's bored. He needs some fun.
Yeah, I would do like some environmental enrichment stuff, you know, cover up the cords. You know,
and
maybe I know we've talked about feel away before, and feel away can help with, you know, even if it is behavioral, you know, even if it is behavioral, something like feel away may help, you know, but also
love
then
it.
Confining your cat to a space that's environmentally enriched but doesn't have any cords.
I love that. Yes, thank you. Fabulous cat tree, a window to look out of. Feel away diffusers, feel away spray, a really good cat tree with lots of nooks and crannies, and play with a Necco Flies toy 3 times a day for 5 minutes. No cat doesn't love the critters on the end of that wand toy. 5 minutes, 3 times a day. Sally the cat will be nice and quiet, and Prozac for a cat who's chewing cords. We need a new vet. Hello. Come on. Really? Prozac? I don't think so. Right, Jason?
Well, we do use it very successfully in some cats.
But not because they're chewing a cord.
I wouldn't. That certainly wouldn't be my first line defense for that. I think there's a lot of other things that could be tried. And who knows, maybe those have been tried, but she certainly hasn't told us that they have. So I would start with those other options and reserve the drug therapy for another time.
Yeah, or for situations that warrant it, like really bad, you know, like freaking out, aggression between cats or with cats and people, right? Things that are some emotional explosion that are profoundly dangerous to everybody, whereas like the cords, you can just cover them.
Yeah.
Dr. Jason, it has been such a pleasure hanging out with you. The PreventiveVet.com. Am I saying that correctly?
You are indeed.
You guys have got to go there. You've got to check out his super cool book, which, you know, be the first on your block to have it. If you don't live in Oregon, you'll be very special because your vet won't have it yet. It's a great way to stay safe. There's just so much danger out there. So we need you to stay safe. And read Dr. Jason's blog. Super good. Lots of info. Dr. Jason, come back soon. We love you. Thank you so much.
Thanks so much, Tracy.
Take care. Have a great night, guys. Next week, right now at this time, you'll be hearing from Dr. Sue, the pet cancer vet. But for tonight, you got the rest of the night off. Talk to you tomorrow. Bye for now.